Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Mike Florio with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is, as we hear, he's preparing his palatial West Virginia estate for a massive fireworks show. He's probably gone past state lines, and he's had people illegally bring trucks full of fireworks.
I feel like he might not have to do that in West Virginia.
Yeah, I don't even know what the laws are. I guess
he could probably just go somewhere.
There's
going to
be
West
just
Virginia.
A massive celebration of this country and make us all weep with patriotic joy. He joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Things are good, Mike. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I'm looking forward to watching it this afternoon. Did you check out Hard Knocks offseason?
I haven't yet, and I probably will. I'll probably watch it while I work out later. I really don't want to. I'm curious how they can continue to generate Hard Knocks content. It's kind of like how Pizza Hut keeps finding ways to put cheese into the crust of a pizza. Where else can you jam cheese into and around a pizza? But they apparently think that people want it and that people will consume it, so they keep doing it. I just don't know what there is that's happening in the offseason that anyone would care about, especially a team like the Giants, which is just on the borderline of relevance right now.
I had a thought about the cheese situation you just discussed. What if you do a double crust and then put a layer of cheese between the two crusts on the bottom?
That's like a Crunchwrap Supreme.
Then it becomes a double decker pizza. I think I just created Pizza Hut's next concept.
We did something the other night, although I didn't do it, my brother-in-law did, that probably would be conducive to a massive coronary. We had lasagna and pizza, and he actually put lasagna on top of the slice of pizza, like spread out. So that could be a new thing too. Different pasta dishes that get distributed onto the top of the pizza over and above the pepperoni, cheese, and whatever else you have. Hey, there's a million-dollar idea that somebody's going to steal. You're going to have pasta on top of the pizza.
There's a YouTube channel called Epic Mealtime that might be up your alley there. I also have a valid Bears question, but it's not as fun as this. When do you start to be concerned about Caleb Williams not having signed his rookie contract yet?
Great question.
Not as good as the pizza, though. I mean, they're both a toss-up, pun intended.
It used to be no one really signed until after the 4th of July. And I remember the Bears were kind of the outliers with Cliff Stein doing the contracts. They would start getting them done in June, which was like, oh, well, what's the hurry? It's June. We don't do these until after the 4th of July. Now most of them are signed before Memorial Day. And there's just a handful of guys unsigned in round one, five of them, two with the Bears. And I wrote something about this earlier, and I think we've talked about this in the past. There isn't much over which player and team can haggle. Cash flow for the signing bonus. How soon am I going to get my signing bonus? I'm getting it all now. Am I getting half now, half a year from now? Is there some other formula you're proposing? When do I get my money? That's one thing. What will it take to allow the team to wipe out the remaining guaranteed money? That was the thing that Roquan Smith held out over, what, 6-7 years ago, where any suspension for any type of thing, on-field violation, boom, the guarantees go away. There was a holdout over that. And then also, this doesn't come up very often, but if the guy's cut with guaranteed money left on his contract, and for the first round, all of the contracts are fully guaranteed for 4 years, if he's cut and he goes somewhere else, would the Bears get credit for what he earns elsewhere, or would it be a double dip situation where there's no offset? He keeps everything from the Bears plus whatever he gets elsewhere. Those are the only three things that there are to argue about. And so why can't we get a deal done? Now, he doesn't have an agent. Maybe that's one of the reasons it's taking time. But I'd say once we get, let's say, to the 11th of July, 1 week removed from the 4th of July, that would probably be the point to start wondering what's going on here.
Speaking of contracts, you put together an early list, a cloud of names of veterans who would possibly either hold out or hold in. What filters did you use to determine which names you would write up?
I don't know. I don't have much of a filter. So it's just my base of knowledge and what we've been writing about and talking about since last season ended, the things that have hit our radar screen, the players that have either been openly or discreetly trying to get new contracts. Tyreek Hill, for example. Most people would say, who haven't been paying attention to the NFL since the end of the season, oh, he's fine, he's under contract. Yeah, but he's making less than $20 million this year, and he's actually under a $25 million a year contract. The final year drives the average up artificially to $30 million. He's being left in the dust by Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's even $3.25 million per year behind his teammate, Jalen Waddle. So that's one that I'm keeping an eye on because he's saying all the right things, but at a deeper level, he wants his money. Tua Tagovailoa, same thing. A lot of people aren't recognizing the possibility he might not show up. So it's basically 4 or 5 months of hotspots that have popped up. I tried to catch all of them, and I probably missed a couple, but there's a lot of guys that are obvious and guys that aren't obvious that may be holding out when camp opens.
Mike, we've talked about on this show recently, Ryan Poles very positive about Caleb Williams ingratiating himself into the city. He's out and about. He's embracing the concept of being the quarterback here. He's in a position of power here. Like there theoretically could be something that could happen. Since it is July 3rd and this is the dark period of the NFL, I feel like I can ask you about a good hypothetical here. You know, is he trying to do something that hasn't been done in a rookie contract situation as well? And how much leeway, given the CBA, does he have?
All he could really do is say, I want my entire signing bonus today. I want no language in the contract that would allow you to void the guarantees. And I want no offset if you would cut me at some point in the next 4 years and I'd be a free agent and I'd go somewhere else. That's really it. There's nothing else significant that his dad or whoever's advising him or him directly could ask for. The money is set. The money is determined. It's all slotted. That was the upshot of the 2011 CBA. There's only so much you can do. And once you get to the point where the contract is fully guaranteed, and we're seeing more and more guys as we get deeper and deeper into the draft get guarantees and full guarantees. It used to be the first 20 players got full guarantees. Now the full first round gets full guarantees. The first pick's always gotten a fully guaranteed deal. So there isn't much that can be done. And if I'm Caleb Williams, let's just get this done. Let's just get this behind us. Let's get my signing bonus today. I mean, in theory, you know, the proverbial hit by a bus. I mean, you want to get that money today because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Bears report to rookies report to camp on the 16th. So we're less than 2 weeks away. Mike, what do you make of what's happening between Micah Parsons and Malik Hooker?
Well, on the surface, look, Micah Parsons is a cornerstone player with the Cowboys. He's one of the great defensive players in the NFL. There has been some chatter that maybe Micah Parsons' routine is wearing thin on the Cowboys. I look at it and say, it's Micah Parsons. Do a little research on what the Giants tolerated with Lawrence Taylor. They dealt with a lot worse with Lawrence Taylor because he was a great player. That's what Micah Parsons is. And I think Malik Hooker may be articulating some of the frustrations that the Cowboys might have against Parsons having his podcast and speaking his mind and calling people out and kind of doing what he does. And he may need to modulate that at some point, but he's Micah Parsons. And it's amazing to me that anyone connected to the Dallas Cowboys would say anything other than, Micah, do whatever you want, say whatever you want. As long as you show up and play like Micah Parsons, we are fine with it. And that's another one that's a lurking hotspot. He said he's willing to wait his turn for a new contract. If I'm Micah Parsons, I'm not setting foot on a practice field until I get my long-term deal. He's due to make under $3 million this year. That's criminal for what this guy means to the Cowboys and to the NFL. So I think it's a mistake by Hooker, but I also think Hooker felt comfortable saying it because for whatever reason, there's this weird vibe around the Cowboys that they don't like the way Micah Parsons carries himself. Well, he'll carry himself for another team if you don't like having Micah Parsons around.
I think that's a good time to ask you this. Who has been the most disappointing NFL team this offseason?
I mean, the Cowboys are the easiest ones, especially because they set the bar with Jerry Jones saying at the Senior Bowl they're going all in the classic sense, not some other alternate meaning of the term all in. Chips in the middle of the table. I didn't even know there was a different meaning, but chips in the middle of the table. We're going to do everything we can to have a team that gets to the Super Bowl and wins it this year. Oh, wait, we can't do any of that because we've got a contract mess with Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Parsons. And Dak is the linchpin. And they're not willing to do what they have to do to get Dak Prescott's cap number down from $55.4 million this year. And if he leaves after this year, he counts for $54.5 million next year. So his leverage, people say when Jared Goff does a contract, what's that mean for Dak? Nothing. Because his leverage comes from his cap numbers. Same thing with Trevor Lawrence. What's it mean for Dak? Nothing. His leverage comes from his cap numbers. And I think they're trying to figure out a way to play this out where they get through this season, make him an offer. He sees what else is out there, and he realizes I'm better off staying with the Cowboys. But until then, it's $55.4 million this year. It makes it hard to do business. And you look at the Eagles, they've gotten better. And last year, they were the better team. They just fell apart down the stretch. The Cowboys got lucky to pull the inside straight and win the division. The Cowboys are really going to be in a mess this year. And your coach is a lame duck. Jerry Jones, think about Bill Belichick. I just have the feeling this could end up being a mess for the Dallas Cowboys.
Mike, we had a conversation, I think it was off the air yesterday, talking about the Aaron Rodgers gallivanting through the Egyptian desert. And then Lawrence asked, is he healthy? Is Aaron Rodgers is he actually ready to play NFL football?
Well, he might be healthy, but let's look at it this way. He's played 4 snaps of regular season football in 20 months, and he's going to play 3 games in 10 days to start the season. And when he's spoken about the upcoming season, there's this presumption he's going to play all 17 games. I'm betting the under on that. If DraftKings makes that prop available, and if I were allowed to bet and inclined to bet, and I'm not on either count, I would say this guy's not playing 17 games. Why would we believe he's going to show up at age 40, coming off of a torn Achilles, 4 snaps since January of 2023? He's going to play 17 games this year. You know, the problem for Aaron Rodgers is his lower body is so explosive that he can still muster the acceleration and the speed that he used to. But when you get to 40, you start having what the Chris Sims calls it, the old man injury, where the ligament is going to say, no. The tendon is going to say, no. You know, the muscle fibers are going to say, no. You're not 27 anymore. And I think they really need to consider, if you remember, there was a year where Aaron Rodgers had a calf injury and he played through it most of the year. It was the year where in the playoffs, or close to the playoffs, and Ndamukong Suh actually accidentally stepped on his calf with his cleat. He said his foot was numb because it was cold in Green Bay that day. He didn't realize he was digging his cleats into Aaron Rodgers' injured calf. He stayed in the pocket. He didn't move around a lot. I think the Jets have to keep him stationary because once he accelerates, that's when something may go. So I don't know why, even if he's healthy, I don't know why anyone just believes he's going to stay healthy all year long.
Mike, watching what Patrick Mahomes is doing from a business standpoint is pretty fascinating. And now he got Texas A&M to flip from Under Armour to Adidas because he's an Adidas athlete. And they even used him taping Adidas over a Texas Tech Under Armour shirt to as their promo. They put a facsimile of that over the field, and then they reveal the Adidas logo and the Patrick Mahomes logo. Can you remember, maybe Peyton Manning is the comp here, of a quarterback in the middle of their career doing so much from a business standpoint to set themselves up after their career is over?
Well, and I remember early on, Patrick Mahomes' representative said he's being very careful and selective about which endorsement deals he does. He doesn't want to move too fast. Now, everywhere you go, there's Patrick Mahomes, and it makes sense. He's the most marketable player in any sport right now. I believe he's worth $100 million a year to the National Football League. I've been saying they should have a separate fund that compensates the guys who are the true faces of the game. He is worth far more than what he's getting paid directly to the NFL. And, you know, this is a guy who as long as he continues to play like he has the last 6 years, and his His floor in 6 years as a starter is losing in overtime of the AFC Championship game. That's his worst in any season since he's been a starter. It really is incredible, the resume he's putting together. He's never changed. He's down to earth. He's a great guy. He's everything you'd want in a football player, and I can understand why he's in position to leverage that into a business empire. And here's to Patrick Mahomes and everything he's able to do financially.
It's actually kind of surprising when you consider it that he hasn't done more given his extreme success in that vein. Like it's being a teammate. We talk all the time about like people setting up their teammates for success in unlikely ways. You see it in the NFL or at pro days, for example. And maybe he doesn't get enough credit for the focus he really has kept on the football side when you consider the success he could really achieve on the personal marketing side.
Look what Caleb Williams is doing.
That's a good example.
Caleb hasn't even played an NFL game, and he already has like an investment firm.
And I'm not even saying that's wrong. You know, it's following your effort versus maybe your passion. But, Mike, I want to know your thoughts on that, too. Patrick Mahomes hasn't been that guy as much. Maybe that's just who he is. But it's good to see him taking advantage.
And he's able to do everything that he needs to do. He balances work and family. He's all in with football. He's fully committed in the offseason, spending time with teammates, taking them down to Texas, working out with them, doing the things where he'll go work out with the guys they're evaluating in the draft. And he's just very invested in the ongoing success of the team. And there was something that came up recently. His mother made the comment that maybe he won't play as long as Tom Brady did because if it conflicts with family, he'll step aside. I think he's still obsessed with getting to 7 or 8 Super Bowl wins, but it would be interesting to see. And it's a tall order for him to catch Brady before the age of 40. If he would catch and pass Brady in the next 10 or 11 years, would he just say, I'm done? The moment he gets to number 8, would he walk off into the sunset the way that Brady's wife, ex-wife wanted him to do after the 28-3 comeback, when he got to number 5, the year he was suspended? You know, I argued, hey, this is the perfect time to do the longest yard thing. Paul Crew takes the trophy to the commissioner and says, put this in your trophy case and just, I'm out. I could see Patrick Mahomes doing that once he achieves everything that he set out for himself in football and not just hang around and hang around and hang around. It's just going to be fascinating to see what the next decade holds for Patrick Mahomes and for all of us, because he's clearly the most impactful player in the NFL.
I think it's actually stick this in your trophy case, if I remember.
Stick this in your trophy case.
Yeah.
That's right.
It wasn't just put. I think there's a different
Eddie Albert.
Different verb there said to Eddie Albert.
Mike, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Florio, and we are the Bernstein and Holmes Show. That is Layla Rahimi. Let's do a little sexy football next, because we were talking yesterday. Our guest, Cynthia Freeland, was discussing what she is seeing regarding trends. She does not only some analytics for NFL Network, NFL.com. She has her own proprietary model that she also uses as a consultant for some NFL teams. It gave us some insight into some trends.
If you are someone that has been decrying the idea of smash mouth football.
Me!
Then this segment is for you.
Yes!
Next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes.
I'm still stuck, Dan, in trying to figure out what? Exactly what it is we do here. Right? Well, no, that part I've figured it out. There's fart jokes and mascots. That's all is going on here.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Fart jokes and mascots.
Middays 10 to 2. On 670 The Score.
It's football, mister.
Yeah, it is, especially when we're talking blocking schemes and line play.
Hello, ladies.
We really could have done this music for the Aaron Judge segment as well.
Sexy baseball.
I feel inappropriate saying it out loud.
Well,
the 922 slugging of 51 games. Right.
So when we have smart football people on, we can ask about what we see. We can ask about what certain analytic models are telling people and what the talk is around the league. Because football, like a lot of sports,
it's football, mister,
is a sport of where fashion matters. Not in the NBA, WNBA way necessarily of having your little, you know, runway stop and repeats as you head into the arena, but in what's hot and what's not
when it comes to X's and O's?
You mean scheme?
We're not going to talk about scheme.
Yeah, we are.
But you just talked about scheme.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are.
There are a lot of people who feel like when it comes to run games that, I mean, you know who we should run this by? I mean, now I'm thinking about it. Like if
Matt Forte?
Well, yes, he's one of the people. Mark Schlereth.
Yeah, good call.
We should run this by him
but
at
then
some
again,
point.
But we interested.
He came from the scheme of the Alex Gibbs.
Not just came from it. He's like one of the
the avatar,
Gibbs
yeah.
guys. He's one of the people that when you talk about belly stretch, cut back, and crack back on the lower leg of the
tackle. It was still legal to
end.
Do.
Yeah, even it's though, not legal anymore.
Even though
it's
people
not
still,
even really moral.
Even though people still kind of try to do it anyway, and then they put their hands up like, I didn't do that.
I totally didn't try to take that guy's knee out.
I was nowhere,
I never do that.
I was nowhere near that guy.
That guy has a knee? I didn't know he had knees.
So if you think about zone blocking and what zone blocking has done to standardize a lot of what we see from offensive line play about having athletic players who can maybe kick step their way outside, go to an area rather than necessarily remembering an individual assignment. What Cynthia Freeland of NFL Network told us was that she thinks, as happens, the pendulum is swinging back to something from our collective childhood.
On the field, I think you'll see the pendulum swing back to what we were trying to get away from before, right? You saw it a little bit last year. For a while, outside zone runs were like all of the rage. It was a Shanahan model, blah, blah, blah. But now you're seeing people run duo or ISO, which meaning like, you know, run up the A-gap like you did in high school, right? Like, so the pendulum will always swing back and forth. So I think now it'll be a matter of who gets their players in a position where they have the right personnel to execute whatever the next fad is, which is very likely a swing back to a little bit more old school ways and a little less option-y, you know, ways. But I will put a caveat there. We will have to do that after we suss out some of this stuff with between conference realignment and NIL happening at the same time in the transfer portal. What are the kids, what are the assets coming out of college that we can build into an NFL program?
I'm waiting to see how the bodies then change too, because we've seen with scheme changes come a different assessment of the balance between power and speed. And I know we keep saying bigger, stronger, faster, but at some point a coach and an athletic training staff is going to say, we want you on the stronger side of stronger, faster. We want you on the faster side and monitor things that way. If we're talking about A-gap runs and isolation blocks and a sledgehammer fullback, Corey Schlesinger up in there, Lorenzo Neal taking on a linebacker, then we're going to have some more old school football bodies.
I mean, it will be dictated by what comes out in, of the draft and what comes out of college. But I do think that those, like if you're, I think there's like some like Fred Warner types on the defense will also be kind of where this thing's going to. It's just going to be like what do we have and how do we balance it out with its, you know, counterbalance. But it always is cyclical. So look for ISO duo to make a comeback in places where they have the body type that can execute it.
Yeah, the idea offensive lineman climbing to the second level and targeting a linebacker. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes things just make sense. For example, forward movement is the most efficient. Run behind your strongest people.
Yes.
Run to where you can find light the fastest. I know it's not sexy. I know it's not the coolest thing ever. But will it get you yards? Then I'm good with it.
Well, especially short yardage, goal line situation stuff. Like, are you better off? I mean, and it depends on personnel, too.
Are
you better stretching out a defensive line and cutting it back, or are you
having
better
William
off?
Perry run over George Cumbie?
Well, I wasn't thinking that.
It is about mismatches. And a lot of times, like, you can find a more suitable mismatch strength-wise closer to the ball.
Ideally, the answer is both. The answer is have an offensive line capable of doing both.
You can do anything then.
And if that's the case, and you have guys that do have the athleticism to get outside and the strength, the power to execute these duo schemes, which are essentially double teams. It's almost always a strong side
where rather than try to hit the backside backer and wipe him out, you're kind of allowing the running back to make a decision. And you give the running back a little bit of cover. You don't have to blast the guy out of the hole like you do in ISO. But if you have the proper double team to the second level, the running back, if he has the make you miss in the hole kind of wiggle, that could be incredibly effective.
Well, and that goes back to what we've talked about with which positions have suddenly become fungible in the NFL. That requires a little more skill out of a position you may have deemed not that important as a front office. It talks about what she says, Cynthia Freeland, when she discusses this as well. But we, I think, forget a lot of the time that a lot of the offenses that young players are used to that were created in college were made for offensive talent deficiencies or defensive talent deficiencies. The spread offense gets fast people out there quickly. It can cover up a bad offensive line, for example. If you don't have as much talent, you can get guys to run around and create some space. So to me, it's still dictated by what talent you have, but don't forget that you have the best talent at this level, and you should be able to make your scheme reflected as well.
Well, the beautiful thing about football, and this is why I always recommend the book Blood, Sweat, and Chalk to people, is there's always an innovation offensively that leads to a reaction defensively, and we've seen it since the history of the game. And sometimes that means that you go backwards.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, okay. So, like, one of the things that's happened over, like, the last 15 years in the game is the concept of hybrid defenders. Because the game has gotten faster, because coaches have gotten really good at using all of the field to make stuff happen. So you say, well, we can't have, like, lumbering Phil linebackers anymore.
What's wrong with Phil? I like Phil.
F-I-L-L, oh, not P-H-I-L.
Yeah. Oh, Phil linebackers.
So, yeah.
they're playing the Cubs at Wrigley.
They are, and they're probably going to win. But so then you started looking at some of the guys, and we had a chance to look at maybe the best example of a hybrid defender in Brian Urlacher. And then you say, okay, well, what's our counter to that? Well, why don't we get heavier up front? And why don't we say, all right, Brian Urlacher, can you take on a double team from two guys that are 320 pounds?
And or if you're going to buzz backward as the mic, if your first move.
I loved him in Toy Story.
Now we have Phil linebackers and buzz backward. So
I think they play the Cubs after the All-Star break.
How do you eat
they're
up that?
Win too.
How do you take advantage of eating up that cushion then? If you're going to willingly vacate this space. It was one thing when they did, what was it, 700 pounds ass?
Yes.
That was one way
and
of
Ted
saying.
Ted Robinson.
Just Tuesday for me.
Ted Washington.
Ted Washington and.
And Keith Traylor.
Keith Traylor.
Which was modeled after.
God, I love Keith Traylor.
After Siragusa and Sam Adams.
And then you say, like, okay, you're doing this, so we're going to do this. Oh, you're doing this, then I guess we're going to do this. That's the beauty of the game. And you end up back in these places of looking backwards for inspiration, and you end up finding it. So now you look at the way that defenders are set, and I'm glad she brought Fred Warner because I think that he's a good example of everything you want in a linebacker, but right. He is a guy that is going to come up and he can fill a gap and make a play, but he's not just cannon fodder. There used to be a lot of Sam linebackers were cannon fodder.
Where your entire job was just lower your shoulder.
Mess it up. Mess up the play.
Or engage and a stalemate is fine.
Yeah. I used to talk with Hunter Hillenmeyer about this all the time because he played Sam for a lot of those years because you had your crazy athletic middle linebacker and your crazy athletic will linebacker. And Hunter was kind of the garbage man. Like, I'll be the guy that blows up the play on this side or tries to play on a stalemate. I know I'm giving my body up to allow other guys to make plays. I love hearing some of this stuff. Like, I love, like, the idea of the creativity of here's how we can take advantage. Why don't we overpower them? Why don't we give some of our guys, like, if I'm looking at it from a Bears perspective, in my mind, I'm already thinking about H-back behind Tevin Jenkins, short yardage, DeAndre Swift getting 2 yards or getting in the end zone from 2 yards out. Let your guys be nasty. Give them an opportunity to say, how would you feel about winning this one-on-one battle? I'd feel great about it. I can't wait to drive this guy into the back of the end zone.
I mean, that's it for me. It's just efficiency and the concept of if something explosive is happening up front, the defense also has to commit to it, which means an opportunity is going to be there for you 5 yards out, 10 yards out.
That's some of what made me crazy about using David Montgomery in a zone scheme.
Because he is the, instead of making him the cutback guy, he is the straightforward guy who that is impossible to tackle.
Right, exactly. And then if you're going to have a duo block and then a linebacker, you say, here you go, now do what you do, rather than run sideways, get ready for all your moves, and pick a lane, stick your foot in the ground, and rip it back. Like Le'Veon Bell, where Le'Veon Bell would just kind of have the ball, and he'd look, and he'd walk, and he'd look.
He'd wait.
Yeah. 15-yard gain.
And he'd wait, and then gone.
But he was also waiting for somebody to wear somebody down at the line of scrimmage. Like, that's...
Well, it helped that he had elite field vision.
That, too. I mean, that's, you know...
Wasn't he talking trash about Justin Fields a couple days ago?
No. Well, he might have been, but he was talking trash about Adam Gase. Because he's like, we would do halfback dive out of shotgun on 2nd and 10 or 2nd and 7 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
was it going? Like, what was that play supposed to do?
Yeah, he ran routes for Justin Fields was talking.
Oh, no. He was talking about Fields having the ball. He had a Justin Fields video where he was throwing to Steelers receivers, and he's like, man, that ball's coming out late as hell. And it's just routes versus air. Yeah, it was bad.
I need to know more about this Adam Gase story.
Well, the completion of it was...
Is Adam Gase out of football?
Probably. Google.
Apparently, the mentality for Gase was, Le'Veon, you just need to get like 4 yards, and then we got a 3rd and manageable. Like, that's so stupid, dude. 2nd and long runs are the worst play in football, period. Don't ever do it. What drove me crazy about Luke Getsy, because he did it all the time.
Well, the problem
running on 2nd and 10 is stupid.
Well, the problem was what happened on 1st and 10.
Well, that was stupid, too.
That doesn't mean, just because your first down play failed doesn't mean you give up and run it on 2nd and 10. No, you got to throw on 2nd and 10. I don't care what the defense thinks you're doing.
What if we're throwing to a koala?
What?
I don't... You're just trying to trigger me?
Yes, I'm just trying to trigger you.
Adam Gase has been out of football, at least at the professional ranks, for 5 years. But his last job, according to Wikipedia, was interim general manager.
Of?
The Jets.
Oh, I thought it was like Arby's or something. Okay. All right.
What's he doing? What are you doing? I don't know what he's doing.
He's only 46 years old. I need to know where you are, Adam Gase.
We have High Noon coming up next.
Oh, he attended Broncos practice last year.
Awesome. High Noon is coming up. All I have to do is tell a story about something that happened in our house last night. We had sort of an all-timer of an incident.
I'm going to defend America. That's what I'm going to do.
It's about time.
Well, actually, it's more I'm defending Americans for something that they say all the time, and people are always busting their stones for it. Well, I'm here to say America now, America forever, America first.
Oh, man. And by people, do you mean Dan?
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he counts. He's
Grammarian Dan.
I've heard him say this word.
Oh, cool. Well, I had some interesting audio about Dalton Connect. He's named after somebody from a movie. I didn't see the reference at first, but now I get it.
Roadhouse.
You did it already?
No, I was just taking a guess.
Spoiler alert.
Damn it!
Alert.
Was he really named after the Roadhouse guy?
Well, he's not old enough to be named after Rick Dalton from, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, well. Roadhouse.
Next.
How did you...
Bernstein and Holmes.
Mike C. Nelson. Now we know his name is Keith from the Progressive Becoming Your Parents commercials.
The White Sox. I can't believe they did more due diligence on hiring a play-by-play guy than a GM.
Middays 10 a.m. till 2.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable to root for that team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're one of us.
You're one of us, Mike.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
High noon on the Wednesday. Usually, I'm telling you, it's the middle of your work week, and it's all downhill from here. But no, for some of us, this is it. This is Friday on a Wednesday.
I have three more work days after.
Oh, and your work, this is NASCAR for you, so this is a huge work week.
Yeah, Layla and I will be here tomorrow.
Well,
we will.
Enjoy. I'll be.
And you have a special surprise on Friday.
Yep. We're going to have fun on Friday's show.
Friday fun?
Yep. It's me and Jason Bernstein. I'm signing them like I'm Rob Pelinka.
Yeah, but then you're going to lie about why?
Yes.
Like J.J. Redick?
Yes. I don't know if JJ's got the temperament to handle this, but we'll see.
Jason will also say he's never, ever thought about hosting a show with Lawrence. Never in his wildest dreams.
Not in his wildest dreams. Because he's bad.
Because he's bad.
All right.
What do we do? We run out of time.
We did all the stuff and then things and football.
And it was all sexy.
Are you an American that uses the word soccer? And then is brushed back by people telling you, no, it's football.
Mister.
Say it right.
No, I only get mansplained by people who love American football.
Well, the beautiful part about this is not only is it helping you out, but it's two British women who are explaining it.
Would you say soccer or would you say football?
Football.
Because you are
correct.
A true red-blooded British lady. Did you know the word soccer was actually coined by none other than the English? Are you prepared for the etymological history of the word soccer?
Yes, I am, but I'm mad about it.
We English, we love shortening words.
We do, yeah.
Unnecessarily. So let me take you back to the 1800s. Association football, as it was called, was shortened to just ASSOC. So people start saying ASOC. And in the late 1800s in England, particularly in Oxford, there was a fad of adding the word to the end of some words. Thus, a soccer was born here in England. It was about this same time, so in the 1800s, that football, as we know it, was growing in popularity across the pond. Already in America, though, was the popular sport American football that already existed. So the term soccer was adopted because they were like, that makes sense. But then we dropped the term. We dropped the slang term soccer. We stopped using it in the mid-20th century and we started saying football again, but nobody told the Americans. So we spread it over there. We changed the rules. We didn't tell them and now we laugh at them when they call it soccer. So there you go.
Well, that's thoroughly unpleasant.
And that's why you lost the war.
It's also unpleasant.
It's also a good illustration of what happens when other countries adopt languages, because you adopt it as it was spoken in the original place at that time.
I think that the fluidity of language and the etymology itself is absolutely fascinating.
But you don't observe it, Dan.
I love stuff
you don't
like
want
that.
In sentences and prepositions, and Webster says it's okay now.
Webster?
Webster.
Noah Webster.
Is it he had the show Lewis? With George Papadakis.
Does he say it's okay? I don't know. Still doesn't sound the right worst. To my ear.
Soccer.
I don't think we have time for mine, and you already know the answer. I defer to Dan.
We got time, Layla. It's 20 seconds.
No, we don't.
It's 20 seconds.
All right, fine. Here's
I've
the answer
been told
to the
that
thing
I have to ask
know.
You about Roadhouse. Now, this is apparently where the name comes from, so just clarify that for us. Did you see the movie? Was it the parents that were into us? Please, let's get that one out of the way.
I asked my parents how they chose my name, and they brought up Roadhouse, and it was a super old movie. I don't know when it was made, but I watched it. It wasn't too bad.
Roadhouse.
It was a super old movie.
That guy was born in like 2023, right?
Yes.
2022?
Yeah. He was born last year.
I'm
made
sorry,
the
2002.
NBA.
He was actually.
He's that good.
Whoa.
I was like, yeah, he was born at the Broncos camp that Adam Gase attended last year. Well, but when your last name is Connect, maybe you have to find alternative solutions for the first name.
Roadhouse.
Well, this
super old movie.
It's 1989. For him, that is super old.
I can't.
A quarter century before he was born.
Same year as Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, they did a whole celebration. I got some stuff from that for maybe next week.
Cool.
You enjoy that isolation y'all got going, Gen Z.
I watched that movie sitting directly behind Craig Hodges at the Gulf Glen Theater.
Just recently had a birthday.
So last night, speaking of birthdays, today is Beth's birthday. Happy birthday.
Yay!
Happy birthday, Beth!
And unlike her husband,
Saint
she
Beth,
she likes making a huge deal out of her birthday.
As she should.
Happy birthday!
Everything is all about, oh, well, it's my birthday. You treat me like this. And I always tell everybody, hey, if you're going to be nice to me on my birthday, how about being nice to me every day? Why don't you just try that once in a while? Right. That's the response I get. So
it's one that you deserve.
Every other Wednesday, we have Maggie the dog over early in the morning. Because Maggie the dog does not get along with their housekeeper. So from across the street, they bring her over and Maggie gets to spend the day with us because otherwise she just sits and growls at the housekeeper. And the housekeeper doesn't like dogs because she was bitten by a dog when she was very, very young. So it's bad all around. And so Maggie comes over. So last night, Beth says, can we get... She calls over. She goes, look, it's my birthday. Can we have Maggie over tonight and we can keep her overnight and then you would just have to walk her early in the morning? I said, fine, it's your birthday, I'll do whatever you want. And so they text and they say Maggie's coming over. Great. Now Maggie is wonderful with people. She's my favorite dog in the world. There's a lot of things that agitate her. She doesn't get along with other dogs. There are a couple dogs around us who she absolutely are just her mortal enemies, who she will try to chase down and kill. She chases rabbits and murders them, and she chases squirrels and tries to murder them, and you never really know. So we have our second robin's nest over the front door of this cycle. And this the chicks, there are three chicks who are at the age now, they're big enough, they're sort of standing up on the edge, which means they're getting ready to leave. It's time. And they're getting ready to go. We've been watching them saying, well, they got big and they're getting ready to go. We'll say goodbye to another crop. I think we were counting. I think this is 15 or 16 baby robins now that have come from that nest over the years. So click, click, click. We hear Maggie coming up the front steps and the door opens and there's Maggie's owner has her on a leash. I'm there. Beth is there. Zoe walks over and Maggie starts going crazy, barking and like jumping up toward the nest. So one of the baby birds jumps out of the nest, like had never left the nest before in its life. And out it comes, and Maggie's about to lunge at it. So Maggie's owner is he's like 6'4 and 220. So he grabs Maggie, and Maggie kind of is squirming away. The bird runs into the house, like in the house, not just around, in and gone. And Jason stands up from the couch, goes that way and points downstairs. So I'm running. Meanwhile, I hear on the hardwood behind me the click, 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 click. And somehow here's Maggie pulling the leash, starting to give chase. So I've got the dog closing quickly behind me. I don't know where the bird is until I see a flash of feathers down our back stairs. And down by the back door, the bird goes into our shoe rack. And I'm looking, and it's in one of Jason's shoes. The baby bird is hiding in the shoe.
Good spot.
And I think the bird...
Poor baby bird.
Yeah, poor baby bird, scared and in one of his shoes. I can only imagine. So I get the bird out. And I'm just sort of cradling the bird, the poor bird. And then the dog is looking at me like, give me the bird. I want to eat the bird. Give me the bird. I'm like, no. So we corral the dog. We get the dog set. We get the bird. Everything's it's just total chaos. Everybody's screaming. And I set the bird outside. And because the parents, then I see the bird parents are there. Because they've got to be terrified.
They're moving.
So everybody's, it's fine. The bird is there. The parents are there. It's okay. And everybody's terrified. We've got, you know, the dog's owners. We're scared. Everybody's scared. I'm trying to talk to bird. I'm talking to birds. I'm telling them it's okay. I'm talking to this bird. I'm talking to those birds. So I hope everything's fine. I'm presuming everything is okay. But this is one of those things where.
This sounds like the story that Sack tells at the dinner table in Wedding Crashers.
just need to do a bird follow-up next week.
We'll see. We'll see. There's one left in the nest who hasn't left, and they're kind of all standing around like, come on, Steve, let's go.
Roadhouse.
Let's go. Roadhouse.
Why?
It's fun to say.
I'll do this. What? Coming up next, we talk more football, correct?
Yeah, NFC North conversation.
On the score?
Yep.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Mike C. Nelson. Now we know his name is Keith from the Progressive Becoming Your Parents commercials.
The White Sox. I can't believe they did more due diligence on hiring a play-by-play guy than a GM.
Middays 10 a.m. till 2.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable to root for that team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're one of us.
You're one of us, Mike.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there. Out in the street. In front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
High noon on a Wednesday. Usually, I'm telling you, it's the middle of your work week and it's all downhill from here. But no, for some of us, this is it. This is Friday on a Wednesday.
I have three more work days after.
Oh, and your work, this is NASCAR for you. So this is a huge work week.
Yeah, Layla and I will be here tomorrow.
Well,
we will.
Enjoy. I'll be.
And you have a special surprise on Friday.
Yep. We're going to have fun on Friday's show.
Friday Funk?
Yep. It's me and Jason Bernstein. I'm signing them like I'm Rob Palenka.
Yeah, but then you're going to lie about why?
Yes.
Like J.J. Redick?
Yes. I don't know if J.J.'s got the temperament to handle this, but we'll see.
Jason will also say he's never, ever thought about hosting a show with Lawrence. Never in his wildest dreams.
Not in his wildest dreams. Because he's bad.
Because he's bad.
All right.
What do we do? We talk about
he's bad. We're running out of time. We did all baseball, the stuff and then things and football.
And it was all sexy.
Are you an American that uses the word soccer and then is brushed back by people telling you, no, it's football?
Mister.
Say it right.
No, I only get mansplained by people who love American football.
Well, the beautiful part about this is not only is it helping you out, but it's two British women who are explaining it.
Would you say soccer or would you say football?
Football.
Because you are.
Correct.
A true red-blooded British lady. Did you know the word soccer was actually coined by none other than the English? Are you prepared for the etymological history of the word soccer?
Yes, I am, but I'm mad about it.
We English, we love shortening words.
We do, yeah.
Unnecessarily. So let me take you back to the 1800s. Association football, as it was called, was shortened to just ASSOC. So people start saying ASOC. And in the late 1800s in England, particularly in Oxford, there was a fad of adding the word to the end of some words. Thus, a soccer was born here in England. It was about this same time, so in the 1800s, that football, as we know it, was growing in popularity across the pond. Already in America, though, was the popular sport American football. That already existed. So the term soccer was adopted because they were like, that makes sense. But then we dropped the term. We dropped the slang term. Soccer. We stopped using it in the mid-20th century and we started saying football again, but nobody told the Americans. So we spread it over there. We changed the rules. We didn't tell them and now we laugh at them when they call it soccer. So there you go.
Well, that's thoroughly unpleasant.
And that's why you lost the war.
It's thoroughly unpleasant.
It's also a good illustration of what happens when other countries adopt languages because you adopt it as it was spoken in the original place at that time.
I think that the fluidity of language and the etymology itself is absolutely fascinating.
But you don't observe it, Dan. I love stuff. You don't want in sentences and prepositions, and Webster says it's okay now.
Webster?
Webster.
Noah Webster.
Is it he had the show Lewis? With George Papadakis.
Does he say it's okay? I don't know. Still doesn't sound the right worst. To my ear.
Soccer.
I don't think we have time for mine, and you already know the answer. I defer to Dan.
We got Roadhouse. Time, Layla. It's 20 seconds.
No, we don't.
It's 20 seconds.
All right, fine. Here's I've the answer to the thing.
I've been told that I have to ask
know.
You about Roadhouse. Now, this is apparently where the name comes from. So just clarify that for us. Did you see the movie? Was it the parents that were into it? That, please, just, let's get that one out of the way.
Yeah, I asked my parents how that name, how they chose my name, and they brought up Roadhouse. And it was a super old movie. I don't know when it was made, but I watched it. It wasn't too bad.
Roadhouse.
It was a super old movie.
That guy was born in like 2023, right?
Yes.
2022?
Yeah. He was born last 20, year. He already
I'm
made
sorry,
the
2002.
NBA.
He was actually.
He's that good.
Whoa.
I was like, yeah, he was born at the Broncos camp that Adam Gase attended last year. Well, but when your last name is Connect, maybe you have to find alternative solutions for the first name.
Roadhouse.
Well, this super old movie.
It's 1989. For him, that is super old.
I can't. With
quarter
the
century before he was born.
Same year as Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, they did a whole celebration. I got some stuff from that for maybe next week.
Cool.
You enjoy that isolation y'all got going, Gen Z.
I watched that movie sitting directly behind Craig Hodges at the Gulf Glen Theater.
Just recently had a birthday.
So last night. Speaking of birthdays, today is Beth's birthday. Happy birthday.
Yay!
Happy birthday, Beth!
And unlike her husband,
Saint,
she likes making a huge deal out of her birthday.
As she should.
Happy birthday!
Everything is all about, oh, well, it's my birthday. It's my birthday. You treat me like this. And I always tell everybody, hey, if you're going to be nice for my birthday, how about being nice to me every day? Why don't you just try that once in a while? Right. That's the response I get. So
it's one that you deserve.
Every other Wednesday, we have Maggie the dog over early in the morning. Because Maggie the dog does not get along with their housekeeper. So from across the street, they bring her over and Maggie gets to spend the day with us because otherwise she just sits and growls at the housekeeper. And the housekeeper doesn't like dogs because she was bitten by a dog when she was very, very young. So it's bad all around. And so Maggie comes over. So last night, Beth says, can we get... She calls over. She goes, look, it's my birthday. Can we have Maggie over tonight and we can keep her overnight and then you would just have to walk her early in the morning. I said, fine, it's your birthday. I'll do whatever you want. And so they text and they say, Maggie's coming over. Great. Now, Maggie is wonderful with people. She's my favorite dog in the world. There's a lot of things that agitate her. She doesn't get along with other dogs. There are a couple dogs around us who she absolutely are just her mortal enemies, who she will try to chase down and kill. She chases rabbits and murders them, and she chases squirrels and tries to murder them, and you never really know. So we have our second robin's nest over the front door of this cycle. And this the chicks, there are three chicks who are at the age now, they're big enough, they're sort of standing up on the edge, which means they're getting ready to leave. It's time. And they're getting ready to go. We've been watching them saying, well, they got big and they're getting ready to go say goodbye to another crop. I think we were counting. I think this is 15 or 16 baby robins now that have come from that nest over the years. So click, click, click. We hear Maggie coming up the front steps and the door opens and there's Maggie's owner has her on a leash. I'm there. Beth is there. Zoe walks over and Maggie starts going crazy, barking and like jumping up toward the nest. So one of the baby birds jumps out of the nest, like had never left the nest before in its life. And out it comes. And Maggie's about to lunge at it. So Maggie's owner is he's like 6'4 and 220. So he grabs Maggie and Maggie kind of is squirming away. The bird runs into the house, like in the house, not just around, in and gone. And Jason stands up from the couch, goes that way and points downstairs. So I'm running. Meanwhile, I hear on the hardwood behind me the click, 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 click. And somehow here's Maggie pulling the leash, starting to give chase. So I've got the dog closing quickly behind me. I don't know where the bird is until I see a flash of feathers down our back stairs. And down by the back door, the bird goes into our shoe rack. And I'm looking, and it's in one of Jason's shoes. The baby bird is hiding in the shoe.
Good spot.
I think the bird.
Poor baby bird.
Yeah, poor baby bird, scared and in one of his shoes. I can only imagine. So I get the bird out. And I'm just sort of cradling the bird, the poor bird. And then the dog is looking at me like, give me the bird, give me the bird, give me the bird. I want to eat the bird, give me the bird. I'm like, no. So we corral the dog. We get the dog set. We get the bird. Everything's it's just total chaos. Everybody's screaming. And I set the bird outside. And because the parents, then I see the bird parents are there. Because they've got to be terrified.
They're moving.
So everybody's, it's fine. The bird is there. The parents are there. It's okay. And everybody's terrified. We've got, the dog's owners. We're scared. Everybody's scared. I'm trying to talk to bird. I'm talking to birds. I'm telling them it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I'm talking to this bird. I'm talking to those birds. So I hope everything's fine. I'm presuming everything is okay. But this is one of those things where...
This sounds like the story that Sack tells at the dinner table in Wedding Crashers.
You just need to do a bird follow-up next week.
We'll see. We'll see. There's one left in the nest who hasn't left. And they're kind of all standing around like, come on, Steve, let's go.
Roadhouse.
Let's go. Roadhouse.
Why?
It's fun to say.
I'll do this. What do we have next? We talk more football, correct?
Yeah, NFC North conversation.
On the score?
Yep.